Are you ready for the entertainment experience of a lifetime? Knockdown, Dragout, hard-hitting conversations, debates, and interviews. Well, if you said yes to any of these questions, sit back, relax, and enjoy something like no other. This is the Isolation Series Podcast, presented by the Scott Robles team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate, by WellbeingsPerformance.com for all your online meeting needs, by Barbarian Steakhouse, Canada's premier upscale restaurant. For more information, go to Barbarians.com. By ImprintPilates.com Toronto and the Greater Toronto Area's premier Pilates studio. And by the Toronto Immune and Digestive Health Institute. For more information, go to TIDHI.ca. Here now is your host, Spencer Miller.
Hey guys, and welcome to another edition of the Isolation Series. Me, Spencer Miller, very pleased to be joined by my partner in crime and co-host, as always, Paul Shields. And Paul, we are starting this Wednesday, November 16th, 2022, edition of the Isolation Series off with a bang, because I want to get your thoughts right off the top. Breaking news happened earlier today as Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro once again were dancing partners, so to speak, with the Seattle Mariners. And we saw them get rid of a fan favorite over the last 5 years and one of the lead members of the Barrio, and Teoscar Hernandez, for a high leverage back end of the bullpen type of arm. He throws about 98.6 or something like that, which ironically was the same win percentage that we had going into the eighth inning against Seattle in the wild card second game, but I digress. Nonetheless, it was very shocking to me, because if you were going to move somebody, I would have thought that they would have looked to move somebody like Elordis Gurriel Jr. way before they moved a fan favorite and somebody that's proven to be fairly consistent, albeit a little absent-minded at times on the base pass, in Teoscar Hernandez. What are your thoughts on this move? Because yes, they do address one thing with the high leverage back end of the bullpen arm, like we talked about, but they also got a 21-year-old prospect who was the number 7 prospect in the Seattle Mariners system. And we don't know what prospects are going to turn into, as we've talked about many, many times before on this show.
Yeah, you know, I think that this is actually a really smart move for two reasons. One, you know, Teoscar is set to be a free agent at the end of this season coming up. He's already on, a large contract of $10 million plus, probably going to look for something a little bit more than that. And I just think that with what this team has on offense in guys like Vladdy and Springer and Gurriel and Chapman and Teoscar becomes sort of the expendable piece. So I feel like this is a situation of selling high on a guy who, in my opinion, is like, we're going to start to see the law of diminishing returns. So while I think he'll be still good for the next, you know, season, two seasons, even three seasons, whatever contract he signs next, I think we'll be looking at, looking ahead to, can he live up to that? Can he play at that level? Can he continue? Because this is also a guy that he is a fan favorite, and I love Teoscar Hernandez. I loved him as a Blue Jay. I have a lot of respect for what he did for this team. But if you look at the numbers, he is a guy whose swing and miss rate has gone up. His overall numbers are pretty flat. And oftentimes when we see that in players at this level, at this age, they tend to start to head down instead of heading up. So while I don't know that Teo would have been the top of my list for somebody to trade in this offseason, I'm not shocked to see him go. And I think that to get a high-end reliever, proven reliever in, you know, the American League, which is challenging, right? It's a tough, particularly the American League East, it's a tough division. You need good relievers. And a prospect that beefs up your prospect pool that has taken a little bit of a hit over the last couple seasons as you've traded out some guys in the hopes of bringing in more established players like Jose Barrios, right? That, you know, we lost a couple prospects in that deal, for example. I think that this is a shrewd move. The other reason I think it's pretty smart is that I believe that this is just the first shoe to drop, right? So Teoscar goes out. In my opinion, I think that the Jays are looking at beefing up that outfield. We saw Tapia, who was designated for assignment yesterday. You see Teoscar get moved out. I'm wondering if they're going to target someone in center field so that they can ease the load on George Springer and maybe move him to one of the corner outfield spots. And, you know, the Jays can go big game hunting for an outfielder that might play center field. So interesting move, but I'm curious to see what comes next.
Well, on that note, they have been linked heavily to Brandon Nimmo, formerly of the New York Mets. We know that he has a high contact rate and his defensive capabilities are pretty high as well. But I wouldn't consider him a high-end, you know, impact move, so to speak. And to your point, you don't move out Teoscar and designate Rymel and, you know, everybody's favorite person, Bradley Zimmer, as well, if you don't have a big game person in mind. So do you think Brandon Nimmo is that big name that they are looking at? Or do you think that it is Brandon Nimmo plus somebody that we haven't even really heard on the radar quite yet?
Yeah, I think there's more to that. With no disrespect meant to Brandon Nimmo, who I think is a really good player. I think that there's, I think the Blue Jays are looking at probably all the options, anything that's going to make them better and give them that edge, right? You know, last season, they just missed the playoffs. This season, they're ousted in the playoffs in disappointing fashion. So for this team to progress, you know, we're looking at making the playoffs and winning. And so I think they'll be looking for guys. And, you know, again, with no disrespect meant to Brandon Nimmo, like, you know, I wouldn't consider him in that proven playoff competitor category. And I think that that might be where the Blue Jays are looking at. I don't necessarily know who that is. I don't have a name to put on that. I'm just speculating based on, you know, they look a little thin in the outfield right now. So that would lead me to believe that they are targeting outfielders at the moment.
We also know that with some of these designated for assignment things that have come up over the last day or so, this means that they've added youngsters like Aurelvis Martinez and a couple of others to the 40-man roster going into spring training. You know, only time will tell, as I like to say, when it comes to youngsters, and I like to say in general on this program. But are you excited to see some of these high-end people that have been in AAA and doing pretty well for themselves, like Aurelvis Martinez, get a shot to show what they can do with the big club over an extended period of time?
Not necessarily. This team needs to win now, right? And I mean, they need to develop for a future. I'm not saying to like mortgage their future, but I think that if there are veteran players that they can get in this lineup that are going to, that you're more guaranteed of what you're going to get. I don't think we're in a zone where the Blue Jays should be giving young players a lot of leeway. This is a relatively young core. There's now we're starting to see some experience, right? You know, Vladdy and Bo and Biggio and all those guys have been around for a little bit now. You know, you kind of know what you're going to get. So I don't see them giving younger, you know, prospects, true prospects, a ton of time to work it out. If somebody comes in and does amazing things and gives them the best chance to win, then obviously they're going to play. But if like, you know, we look at a team like Baltimore, right? Baltimore, right near the end of the season, they made a really big push, or maybe, you know, about 2 months towards the end of the season, they made a big push to get into those wild card games. They were playing really good baseball, but they were giving lots of time to their top prospects. They were expecting their top prospects to carry a load and to see how they could handle that. And what we saw was them fall short. And that's fine. For a team like that, they're developing. Those players are getting better. That's going to be a pretty good team next year by the looks of it. For the Blue Jays, you don't have time to give, you know, a young player 15, 20, 25 games to quote unquote figure it out. You need to be producing, and the teams around you are getting better. Baltimore's a great example of that. So I'm honestly not really excited. I don't really care if a single prospect makes this team. I want the Blue Jays to win. And if the prospects don't give us the best chance to win, get somebody who does.
Do you believe, as I do, that Ross Stripling still remains one of your number one priorities in this offseason leading into the winter meetings in a couple of weeks, because you know how much of a Swiss Army knife he was for this team over the last couple of years, and especially last year, being able to figure out his mechanics and do what he did in the absence of Hunjin Ryu. And as we know, Hunjin Ryu is coming back from Tommy John. Who's to say what he's going to look like? We hope that we get something good or at least decent out of the back end of the rotation from Hunjin Ryu. But I do believe that Ross Stripling is important to this team still.
I think Ross Stripling is a good pitcher. I think it's I think it would be unwise to expect that he can do what he did last year, maybe ever again. Ross Stripling is a back of the rotation starter, potentially a long reliever. He has done that his whole career, and to expect him to do any more in with a new contract, I think would be foolish. Now, I don't think it's going to be like UC Kikuchi levels of disappointing, but I think that if the Blue Jays go and overpay to keep Ross Stripling around, I don't see him producing at the same level he did last year. Now, he might be really important to that team in a lot of ways. He was unbelievable last year and gave them more than anyone could have expected. But I think if you're scrambling to sign the player that played last year, you are kidding yourself as to what Ross Stripling really is. So for me, he's not a priority. I would love to keep him around, but the number has to be right. And you know, with what happened with Kikuchi last year, it wouldn't surprise me if they're a little gun shy. Now, that being said, they might go with the devil, you know, right? They know what they can expect out of Stripling. He's a great professional. He's going to give you quality innings for the most part. But I think if you're expecting to sign the pitcher we saw last year, I think that might be the outlier. And I think that his average is somewhere not quite as good as he was last year.
Right. A couple other baseball notes that I want to talk to you about that really was puzzling to me. We know that Justin Verlander is the American League Cy Young winner. I believe if it hasn't been announced already, it will be announced here in the next couple of days, because we saw the American League Manager of the Year and the National League Manager of the Year announced yesterday. And he was coming off of Tommy John himself at the age of 39. He has publicly stated, not too dissimilar to Tom Brady in the NFL, that he wants to pitch until he is 45 years old. And it came out just prior to us going on the air to record this today that he's looking for a similar deal that Max Scherzer got last season from the New York Mets, and that is 3 years and $130 million. Now, you know, if this was him at age 36 or even age 37, I'd say, you know what, take the chance. But you never really know when your decline is going to happen, especially after the age of 40. We know that Nolan Ryan, the great Nolan Ryan, pitched till he was 46 years old, and he was sort of the outlier. And we know that Tom Brady keeps defying the laws of time as well, and things like that. But what do you make of Verlander wanting $130 million on a 3-year term at the age of what's going to be 41 when the season starts?
Well, I mean, it's hard to argue with his results, right? He came back and he was excellent last year. So I think he can ask for whatever he wants. I think somebody out there will pay it. If I'm signing Verlander for 3 years, I'm hoping that I get two really good years out of him. One maybe really good year and one average year. And you're probably pretty happy with that. Whatever that third year looks like, you kind of worry about that when you get there. So if you're a team the verge of winning big, and what you need is a competitive, you know, hard throwing gamer of a pitcher, then I make that deal all day, every day, right? You know, we have to remember that there's no salary cap in baseball. So he can put whatever number he wants behind that 3 years. You're really just worried about how that player is going to perform for you. So I would think Verlander is probably not interested in any team that's not competing. you know, I think the usual names will start to creep up. I think Houston will be in the mix. You know, the Dodgers will be in the mix. Yankees will probably be there too. Like, I think there's, you know, there are some teams, maybe even the Blue Jays can sneak in there. He was pretty close. When it came down to it last year. But yeah, I think you're looking at competitive teams, and 3 years for Verlander doesn't scare me, regardless of his age.
So you would accept him on the Blue Jays rotation despite his age and that high number?
1,000%. 1,000%. I don't care about the number. There's no salary cap. What do I care about the number? It's not my money. I want my team to win. Justin Verlander wins.
Right.
And honestly, I don't care what year three looks like. If the Blue Jays can't get it done in the next couple of years, we're looking at probably some bigger changes than we're willing to talk about right now. If they keep scuffling, if they keep tripping over their own feet, you know, a guy like that brings a totally different vibe to your starting rotation. Imagine throwing him and Manoa back to back out there. That, like, those are competitive dudes. Well, they'd be the most hated rotation in all of baseball.
Followed by Gosman.
Yeah, well, of course, Gosman's a competitor, but he might be a little nicer than those two guys. But yeah, like, followed by Gosman. And if Berrios can find his rhythm, like, which I think he'll bounce back. I think last year was just a really tough year for him. Then that's a gnarly looking starting rotation. Now, of course, you know, we're living in a fantasy land because it's all hypothetical. But, you know, it's going to be a team like that is on the verge of doing something incredible, or who wants to get back to the dance, you know, like the Dodgers, like the Astros. You know, I just think that there's so much there. Even if Phillies, Phillies could make a run at it too.
And you know what's really nice is you talk about getting back to the dance. It is going to be the 30th anniversary of the 1993 World Series, which is the last time that the Jays made it to the World Series against the Jim Fregosi led Philadelphia Phillies with Lenny Dykstra and John Kruk and Mitch Williams, as we know, and different things like that. So how storybook would it be that not only do we land Justin Verlander to add to that rotation, but he helps the Blue Jays get back to the World Series for the first time on their 30th year anniversary of the last time they made it to the World Series?
Well, it would certainly be poetic, and I would be cheering for that, but they got a lot of work to do to get there.
Absolutely. And lastly, on the baseball front, little scary news came out again earlier today, and that is Philadelphia Phillies star Bryce Harper might be going under the knife for Tommy John surgery, which is a huge blow to a Phillies team that was quite the gamer once they entered the Major League Baseball playoffs. We know that they slugged it out and made their way to the World Series, eventually losing to the Houston Astros, but they were quite the story heading down the stretch with Canadian first-time manager in Rob Thompson finally getting a chance, taking over for Joe Girardi early in the season and things like that. But this guy is on another level. We saw that all throughout the playoffs and different things like that. And his leadership is really coming into form as well. So to lose him for a potential year and a half to Tommy John, that is unbelievable.
Yeah, it'd be really unfortunate for a team that, you know, obviously had a great season. You want to be able to sort of build on that, and missing a piece like that would be devastating. You know, I mean, you hope the good thing about baseball is that, you know, as we've seen with teams like the Angels, you can have two of the best players on the planet and still struggle. So on the flip side, for the Phillies, you hope that if Bryce has to go under the knife there, that they can make it up around him. But he's obviously a leader on that team. He was unbelievable in their playoff run. So you hope that's not the case. You hope he's not going under.
Right. Only time will tell with that. And I want to switch gears here. We never like talking about this story in life or in sports, but here we are again talking about something like this. And the Virginia football game has been canceled this Saturday. Their home game has been canceled against Coastal Carolina after three of their players died in a shooting on campus, and two other players got injured via stray bullets as well. This is just all around sad. We never want to see this, like I said, on any level of sports or in life. But too often do we continue to see things like this happen. And I just feel bad for that program, for that school. And you know, we saw this a few years ago with Virginia Tech having to deal with something similar to this. And this state, Virginia, has had to battle back and bounce back from something like this on a couple of different occasions already.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, the elephant in the room is continues to be like gun legislation and how these shootings and this stuff continues to happen in the States. It seems to be the only place in the world where nearly every week, certainly every month, we're talking about gun violence on a large scale, right? They're talking about it on a national level because of things like school shootings and post office shootings and campus shootings now involving football players. And, you know, I don't know what it takes. And honestly, not living there, not understanding, you know, the climate of why, I can't speak to why it happens, but certainly from an outsider's view, it's very frustrating. It's very upsetting. And I just don't understand how we continue to spin, and nothing seems to change and nothing seems to be enough to warrant real change when it comes to how these people get a hold of these weapons so freely and easily. And we continue to mourn the loss of young people whose lives have really just started. I don't have a whole lot more to say about that other than I feel for the families. I feel for the teammates. I feel for the school and the state, because that's a lot. That's a lot of baggage to carry. And you know, my heart goes out to those people.
100%. Couldn't have said it better. Transitioning from that, I want to get your thoughts briefly a little bit on some NHL, or as the young kids are calling it, according to the commercial now, Chell, which is weird, but that's neither here nor there. We saw the Toronto Maple Leafs go into Pittsburgh just a few short days after facing Pittsburgh during the Hall of Fame game in Toronto, and avenge that loss pretty well last night. The return to Pittsburgh also marked the return of Matt Murray for the first time in net since opening night, and he looked pretty good and pretty steady in the place where he won two Stanley Cups with the Pittsburgh Penguins earlier on in his career. But a big shout out also goes to Jordy Benn, who in his first couple of games has really made an impact on this team, including last night making a couple of timely saves while Matt Murray was under fire. Otherwise, this game would have taken a whole other turn and been a lot closer than it ended up being in the end. I know that you and I talked at the middle part of the second period last night, where I went to the bathroom, it was 3-0, and then I come back 5 minutes later and it's 3-2. You told me that it was going to be one of those types of games, and it proved to be that. And I was glad that they were able to bounce back and regain that, you know, goal and another empty netter, I believe it was, to make it 5-2. But what were your thoughts overall by their performance in Pittsburgh last night?
I mean, I thought it was a pretty complete game. A little chaos there in the second period, right, where the Leafs jump out 11 seconds to get the third goal. You know, Pittsburgh comes right back, gets two quick ones. But that's a game that we've seen the Leafs sort of lose their cool in before, right? Sort of panic and maybe not make the smart plays. So Pittsburgh gets a timely tip by Raquel in front that sneaks past Murray. And then Rasmus Sandin with just a horrible giveaway to maybe the worst player on the planet to give the puck away to, maybe save for, you know, Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews. But Sidney Crosby's pretty darn bad guy to turn the puck over to, and he lets go of a backhand that only a few guys in the league could possibly do. So that makes it a 3-2 game, and the Leafs have definitely cracked under that pressure before. We've seen that even with this group, this team, you know, in previous seasons. job of just getting back to their game, right? They kill two penalties. And I thought Matt Murray looked pretty good. He made some big saves when it was 3-2 to keep the Leafs in front. Of course, got a little help from Jordy Benn and the Leafs, who played a pretty good defensive game. But instead of, you know, instead of full-blown panic mode, they just got back to playing well, protecting the puck. And then, you know, with less than a minute left, Bunting gets his second goal of the period. And all of a sudden, you have a two-goal lead again going into the third, which they played really well, really good road period in the third, really limiting Pittsburgh's high danger chances. So, you know, overall, I thought the Leafs looked good. I thought Murray looked like a goalie who's played, this would be his second regular season NHL game since last March. So yeah, there was a couple pucks that snuck through him. That's why you play a defensive system to support and help and try and clear some of those pucks away when the goalie doesn't get quite enough of it. But you think about, made a big glove save on Malkin, made a really nice save on a sort of half breakaway by Letang, was solid during the penalty kills where the Leafs were kind of hemmed in a little on a couple of kills in the second period there. While I think that Murray would tell you it wasn't the best game he played, sometimes just getting that first win under your belt, he makes, I think, 33 saves on 35 shots. That's, you know, that's a pretty good night of action for a goalie who's only played two games since last March. So you hope that he can build some confidence from that.
And I didn't realize it really until last night, but Matt Murray is a big body in the net. Like he is a big dude.
Well, when Murray is playing his best hockey, he's using that size to his advantage, right? Like I'm just trying to look up here real quick how tall he is, but he's a big man. I think he's 6'4" at least, I think, but I'm just gonna Uncle Google will let us know, I'm sure. So he's a 6'5" is what is on his hockey DB. So that's a big man, right? Like 6'5" is tall. He's not a thick guy, he's a slender guy, but he takes up a lot of net. He works, the Leafs play a very, their defensive system is one that's designed to give the goalies predictable first shots. A lot of teams play this. It's not revolutionary by any stretch, but for Matt Murray, really, if he can make the first save and not let pucks leak through him, he uses his size. He's a battler, right? He's a goalie that will battle for the puck. We saw that on a couple occasions last night. Even getting a little chippy when guys were getting a little too close to his crease, throwing a couple pushes and shoves here and there. So, you know, that if he can give the Leafs confidence and average goaltending, then they're going to be in good shape. Same with Samsonov when he returns. You just need one. If you can get both of these guys running at 9-10, 9-15, 9-20 even, this team will do very well. And I think you saw the confidence the Leafs have in him. Right. That was a Leaf team that looked like they could push the offense. The defense was very active again last night. So, you know, I like what I saw there. They're 5-1-1 in their last seven. So, you know, it's hard to be too stressed out about that. They're sitting second in their division right now. So, you know, I think the Leafs are where they want to be. And if they continue to get solid goaltending and they continue to play the way they're playing, they're going to be just fine.
And I just want to get your thoughts on something, because obviously we didn't do a show at the end of the week because you were in Edmonton, but the Hall of Fame game and the way that Toronto does it every year is so classy, and to be able to see what they did for Boreas Salming as well over that weekend was something special. I know we touched on it like briefly, but he is going through ALS and Lou Gehrig's disease himself, but he is still one of the most beloved players in all of the NHL and especially in Leafs Nation, and we saw that on full display on back-to-back nights. And to see that despite everything that is ailing him right now, for him to make the trip overseas across the pond really goes to show you how much he wanted to be there, because he's not sure how much more opportunities he'll have to travel like that, I don't think. And you could see the raw emotion on his face with him breaking down, crying with his family, crying next to him. And it was just overall a very heartwarming, great moment. And the ovation provided by the Toronto Maple Leafs fans was unmistakable.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who is the best defenseman in the history of this team. You know, I think that there's pretty hard to argue that. And of course, it's hard to debate era versus era and this and that. But we're talking about a guy who played with heart and determination, who was a beautiful skater, just an elegant player, but with the toughness required to play in the 70s and 80s, right? We're talking about a player who really paved the way. I read a stat. I can't remember if it was TSN Sportsnet or one of the outlets here in Canada that was covering the weekend of events, you know, said that in his first season, which I believe was 73, there were five Swedish players in all of the NHL, five Swedish players. In 2022, at the start of this year, there were 70 something Swedish players that make up between 12 and 13% of the total in the league. Guys like Boris Salming are the guys that paved the way for guys like William Nylander and, you know, well, I mean, the whole Leaf lineup on Friday night, the starting lineup was all Swedish players, which I thought was a great touch, really classy move by Sheldon Keefe and the coaching staff there. But, you know, without guys like Boris Salming, we don't have Matt Sundin. We don't have Peter Forsberg. We don't have the Sedins. We don't have Henrik Lundqvist. We don't have all of these, this wonderful depth of talent. Marcus Naslund. We could stand here all day and name good Swedish players, but he's one of the guys that is a hero to players like that. And for a guy like me, and I'm fans of our show know, and you know, I'm a huge Leaf fan. I am a hockey historian. I love the history of the game, and I love to understand the impact that the great players of the game have had. I did not realize what a trailblazer he was. The stats on Swedish players from then to now, I was not aware of that. And I think there might've been some Maple Leafs that weren't aware of that either. So to see what that player meant, or still means, excuse me, to the Toronto fan base, that was really telling, right? He was stuck with some very good teams that couldn't get over the hump because they were playing, you know, the Islanders and the Oilers and the Broad Street Bullies. And the Montreal was still really great then. And then he played on some pretty terrible teams in the Harold Ballard era when Ballard was just destroying this. And all through all of that, Maple Leaf fans love and respect Boris Salming. And that was so clearly on display. And I think it was really a wake-up call is kind of maybe not the right way, but I think it's the only way I can think of it. But like, when you looked at Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner talk about the reception that the fans gave and how much he means to this city, I think it really kind of shows players what could be, right? When you perform in this market loves you. And Boris Salming is a perfect example of that. So a really classy move by the Leafs. Really, really well done. So emotional, so heartfelt. And I thought it was great. I really enjoyed it.
And, you know, I don't mind saying so. Boris Salming for years always seemed to be one of the most good-looking older hockey players that they had as an alumnus. Every time he would come back for an event and they would announce him, not only would he get a great ovation, but I would be mad at him because I'm like, man, if I look that good at his age, I'll be very happy. And he had good genetics and everything like that. That's just a side note. And I know it doesn't really.
Well, no, but to that point, he's a guy that, like, it's unfortunate the situation he's in with the ALS and what's happening to him now, because you're right. He looks like a guy that could still strap on a pair of skates and play 20 minutes a night because he's just himself in great shape, you know, very stylish man and all that stuff. So of course there's sadness around this, right? Because we don't know how many times if ever we get to see him again in Toronto on the ice with, you know, celebrated like this. So I think even more, that makes it even more important. It's just that much more important that the city got to honor him one more time and got to cheer and got to share ice with, you know, not only the players that he played with, but players that he's inspired and that he paved the way for. It was just really, really well done.
And it just speaks to, like, you know, we talk all the time on this program about, you know, overcoming obstacles and what we got to deal with because of everything that I have to deal with on a daily basis and things like that. And that's just life. But you look at people like co-founding member of Friends of the Show, Zach Brown Band, and John Driscoll Hopkins, recently being diagnosed again with ALS and wanting to fight that. And then Boreas Salming, and then on a different note, a beloved TV and film actress, Christina Applegate, getting her Hollywood Walk of Fame moment a couple of days ago and making her first appearance publicly since being diagnosed with multiple sclerosis and things like that. It's just, it tugs on the heartstrings on multitudes of different levels when you see people like this, and it really puts things back in perspective for you, knowing that at the end of the day, at the core of everybody, we're all human beings, we're all people. And yes, are some of us more fortunate than others to do what we do and get opportunities the way that we do? Yeah, but that doesn't mean that we're invincible and things like that. So I just want to tip my hat to Christina Applegate, Boreas Salming, and John Driscoll Hopkins, to name a few, because they're just a number of people that are battling right now.
Yeah, that's a good call out. And, you know, for anybody out there battling, I think it helps to see others, you know, who have the same struggle, who understand what you're going through, right? And I think that, you know, any type of struggle is that much easier when you have support, when you understand that you're not alone. So having public figures come out and, you know, be open about what's happening and what they're going through, I think it does a lot more than give us these wonderful moments where we get to celebrate and support them. But it also helps those who are suffering quietly, or who are suffering sort of in, you know, they're not public figures, they're just private folks or just everyday people. When you see that, it helps to understand that you're not alone. So, good call out, Spence. Couldn't have said it better myself.
Last couple of things on today's show. Number one, on a lighter note, it was one of the stronger Hall of Fame induction classes that we've seen in a long time, headlined by Daniel Alfredson and the Sedin twins and Roberto Luongo. And so on and so forth, along with some other great people, including the first international women's hockey player to be inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. I don't know specifically how to pronounce her name, but for me, one of the highlights had to have been the speeches between the Sedin twins, because they were throwing jabs out at each other left and right, and it was hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty star-studded, Hall of Fame class. We're starting to get into, I mean, this is kind of a comment on how long we've been watching the game and how old we're getting. But, you know, these are four players that we got to watch their whole careers, or I did it. I know that you did as well. And guys of our age and people of our age would have seen that, right? So you really get to understand the player. And then, you know, as they've retired, you learn a little bit more about the people. And I thought, you know, as frustrating as Daniel Alfredson was as a competitor against the Maple Leafs, hard to argue with what he was able to do and the points he was able to put up and what he meant to the Ottawa Senators. And then for Henrik Sedin, Daniel Sedin, and Roberto Luongo, those are that's Vancouver Canuck royalty, right? Like those are three guys that gave everything they could to that organization. Really cool to see them all honored. And the Finnish superstar you were talking about is Riikka Salonen, is I believe how her name is pronounced properly. An international superstar as far as hockey goes. And then of course, Herb Carnegie, whose name continues on with the Carnegie Initiative in working to make hockey more inclusive, and really give a voice to players of color and you know, champion those initiatives. So really, really motivating and exciting class. Hall of Fame inductions usually aren't really my thing, but I found this one entertaining. I found them funny. And I think part of that is because of the connection that I have to all four of those players, getting to watch their entire careers.
Yep. It just means, like you said, we're getting old, Paul. And to end off today's program, I want to get your thoughts just briefly. You know, when we did the program on Monday, we were talking at the end about the Eagles extending their undefeated streak going up against the Washington Commanders. However, it once again was turned on its head when Taylor Heinicke and the Commanders did in fact go in and beat Jalen Hurts and the Philadelphia Eagles. So there is no longer an undefeated team in all of the NFL this year. How surprised were you at that game? And if you are Ron Rivera coming off of that big of a win and knowing how the players play under Taylor Heinicke, or seemingly play under Taylor Heinicke, even though Carson Wentz is scheduled to come back, would you ride Taylor Heinicke right now based on the success that they've had under him?
Okay, so two parts to this question. Was I surprised? Yes. I didn't think this is the week that the Eagles would fall, right? I kind of thought that looking ahead, they might have more challenge to try and get to that double digit figure, right? You know, particularly, I think next week they play Indianapolis, and anytime a new coach comes in, there's that new coach bump, or usually, right? Not anytime, but most times. And so I thought, you know, maybe that next week would be really where I would have predicted that they would, their streak would end. But like we said on Monday, these are, like, it's hard to be undefeated in any sport, in the NFL in particular. So to go 9-0, there's not a ton of teams that have done that over the course of NFL history. And when you start to get to that 9-0, 10-0, you're talking about some pretty darn elite teams. So while I was surprised that it was this Washington Commander team that ended up doing it, I'm not shocked, right? I think on Monday I picked Philadelphia. I think I might have even picked them to cover, but not shocking. It was a game. This just happens to be the one they lost. Now, for the Taylor Heinicke portion of it, I would probably stick with him, regardless of because we're not talking about a Cooper Rush, Dak Prescott situation here, right? Cooper Rush did really well when Dak Prescott went down, but Dak Prescott is the Dallas Cowboys. He's the future of that team. Carson Wentz, his stock has continued to fall year after year after year. He has not looked good this season. Washington, with that win, puts themselves in a situation where they might be looking at a wild card hunt. They might be looking to chase down a playoff spot. Now, I know it's a little bit, you know, it's outside. They're outside sort of the teams you would talk about first. But a big win like that and the division that they're playing in puts them in a pretty good spot. So, or certainly a better spot than had they lost. So if I'm Rivera, I'm running the guy that's hot. I'm taking the quarterback that can win me games, because Carson Wentz doesn't mean anything to the Commanders. You know, he's not a franchise, and he has not been playing definitively better than Heinicke. So I say, you know, you run the hot hand. Whoever's winning you games, that's who's playing.
Right. Is there anything that we haven't covered on today's edition of 224 that we should cover, my friend?
Now, Spence, I think we got it all. Really excited to see what the next move for the Blue Jays is. I'm going to be focused on that a lot over the next couple of days. Leafs are back home against New Jersey tomorrow night, so we'll be excited to talk about that. I'm just looking forward to the rest of the week, my man.
The New Jersey game ends up being a little bit more of an interesting game than you would have thought at the beginning of the season, too, because they've had a really good start to their season overall based on what they've dealt with over the last, you know, 2-3 seasons. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, well, I think New Jersey has been better on paper than they have been performing, right? You know, they struggle even to start the season. They struggled. I mean, the fans were chanting to fire the coach, 2 weeks ago. But it's crazy what 10 games can do, and particularly a 10 game winning streak. So they're on fire. There's definitely some intrigue there. I believe that the Devils will come back to earth. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that they are an elite team, but they are on a really good stretch right now. They're playing really good hockey and they're getting really good goaltending. So, you know, Leaf team is also playing well. You hope Matt Murray can string together another good game, get a little more confidence, get a little more of a feel for the puck, right? After you get the first one out of the way, the next one's always a little bit easier. So you hope that the Leafs come in with a mentality that they have to bring their best, because Jersey's playing like a top team right now.
By Wednesday, November 23rd, 1 week from today, is Bruce Boudreau still be head coach of the Vancouver Canucks?
I believe so. Mostly because I believe that they do not want to pay three coaches, right? People forget that they're still paying Travis Green from last year because of the firing. So I don't think that Boudreau's going anywhere just yet. I think that if he is going to go, it's going to be a little bit later in the season. And I think it depends. Vancouver has to make the decision of whether they're in the Connor Bedard sweepstakes or not. Right. They that's a decision that needs to be made by their ownership group and their GM and president. Because if you're in the Connor Bedard sweepstakes, there's no reason to go get a new coach. You got to start trading players. I think that core in Vancouver is rotten. Something's not working there. Not that I think they're bad players. There's just something about that mix that isn't working. And they got to decide if they're going to, you know, try and make the playoffs in a wild card spot and just miss again and get a bad draft pick and continue to have a bad team, then this rebuild's going to, or this retool, whatever you want to call it, it's going to take forever. So I think that we're going to start seeing some marquee players get traded off that team before we see a coaching change made.
Right. And just out of curiosity, where's Taylor Hall at these days?
Taylor Hall's playing for Boston, playing pretty well. I don't know. I haven't heard a lot about him this year, but he's found a home in Boston and been playing well there since he was traded a couple seasons ago. So he's just plugging along.
Right. Absolutely. As always, I appreciate you taking the time to join me and us chew it up as often as we do on this little thing we like to refer to as the Isolation Series, presented by WSIB, the Toronto Immune and Digestive Health Institute, and so many other great sponsors without whom we wouldn't be able to do this. So big shout out to you once again on this Wednesday, Paul Shields.
Absolutely, buddy. Wouldn't miss it. Glad to bring another show to those who like to watch and listen. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in.
Absolutely. That right there is Paul Shields. I am Spencer Miller. This has been your Wednesday, November 16th, 2022, episode 224 edition of the Isolation Series. And we look forward to coming at you again pretty, pretty soon with another episode. And we are going to dive headfirst into this week's games in the NFL, along with any other pertinent information that happens in sports for the rest of the week. But until then, we look forward to our next episode. Bye-bye. And Paul, please tell people all about some more whole grain goodness that is us.
Folks, be sure to check us out on podbean.com by going to theisolationseries.podbean.com. There you'll find the audio-only versions of the podcast, including all of our past amazing interviews. One more time, that's theisolationseries.podbean.com. And hey, don't forget to follow us on Instagram. It's at @vspencermiller and at Pauly Shields, Pauly spelled P-A-W-L-Y. So find us on podbean.com, follow us on Instagram, and don't forget to like, share, and subscribe.
And once again, everybody, thank you for watching and or listening and supporting this thing we like to call the Isolation Series. For Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller, and we will see you again very, very soon. Bye-bye.